Hi there, Jonathan here. The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website where you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. That's at www.jonathanfaust.com. Thank you and enjoy. I'd like to start off tonight by sharing three short stories that demonstrate how horrible life can be. Number one, today I was the only one in an elevator when an attractive girl came in talking on her phone. She told her friend, "I have to go. There's a cute guy on this elevator." Before I could even react, she turned to me and said, "Sorry for lying. I just wanted to get off the phone." Number two. Today, after work, I went to the parking lot to go to my car to go home. I found my car doors heavily scratched and all my tires cut, with a note on my windshield. The note read, "I hate you, Jackson. I'm Tyler. Jackson shares my office." Number three. Today I was a teaching assistant for a history class, and the class was taking a test. About halfway through, I noticed one kid had a small piece of paper in his hand. I ran up the row, grabbed his test, and ripped it into four pieces. Then I took the note from him. It said, "I believe in you. Love, Mom." Those are all horrible moments, but they're nothing when you consider the topic of this talk, which is could be entitled, "You Are Going to Die." And the byline is, "And get sick and get old." So I hope you're up for a cheery romp through sickness, old age, and death. I'd like to talk a little bit about how fundamentally this is a reality-based practice, and how sickness, old age, and death are real. They're facts of this human existence. To explore some suggestions about how do you live in a state of embracing impermanence, if impermanence is a reality. And the fourth of, given the fact of death, how do you choose to live, what time you have. So a little bit on the reality-based practice. It was a story I ran across in the New Yorker a long, long time ago. It was a story of one of the, at that time, I think he was the highest paid executive coach in the world. And it told a story of how he was having a meeting with the vice president of some corporation, and, you know, the board wanted to get some executive coaching for him. And so he called him, he came in his office, and he did a little interview with him. And he said, "Tell me about your relationship with your wife." And he said, "It's great. She's my best friend. You know, she supports me. I support her. It's really good." And he said, "Tell me about your relationship with your kids." He said, "My kids are awesome. You know, they're in college right now. They're doing really well. I'm really proud of them." And then the coach said, "What's your wife's phone number?" So he gave him the phone number, and he called his wife right there and said, "How's your relationship with your husband?" And she said, "I hate him. He's a narcissistic jerk who's always trying to control me." And then he talked to the kids, and the kids had all their complaints. And that was the beginning of his coaching experience with this guy. Pretty dramatic story. But it really does reflect how we tend to tell ourselves stories that aren't necessarily true. They're not necessarily grounded in reality. So when you begin to practice mindfulness, that is to say, when you practice non-judging awareness, you start to see more and more clearly. You start to see to the nature of reality. It just happens. You don't have to buy into any belief system. You don't have to have any political affiliation. You just relax and pay close attention to two things: to what arises and to your relationship to what arises. And what gets revealed in your practice is seeing more clearly into the effect of three fundamental elements. Classically, they're referred to as the three poisons. You will see more and more clearly into the nature of greed, the nature of hatred, and the nature of delusion. That you will see how your own wanting, desiring, clinging affects your life experience, of how hatred, delusion, aversion, judgment, blame colors your experience, and how delusion colors your experience. Delusion is believing something's true when it's not, or believing something isn't true when it is. So this is the essence of the practice. You know, what's real? What's true? What's unreal? And there's a very interesting distinction. Tsoknyi Rinpoche has this great little teaching about how things can appear real, but they're not true. You know, we can have a very strong emotion that feels real, but it's not necessarily true. It's an impermanent state that's passing through. And so when you're really on for being awake to reality, it requires paying close attention and the willingness to see when you're deluded, to see when you're driven by some unseen energy of greed or some unseen energy of hatred. And that leads to a classic story which kind of informs Buddhism and Buddhist psychology. And I'm sure many of us are familiar with the story, but it goes back to what was the spark for the Buddhist practice. And again, when it comes to looking at the stories in Buddhism, some people can see them as the example of one person living their life. You can see it more metaphorically. You can see them as sort of the archetype of what it means to be in human form. But the story basically goes back to the Buddha's childhood, where he lived a very sheltered life, a very protected life. His father was told by a great astrologer, "Your son will either be a great spiritual teacher or he'll be a great ruler, a great king." And his father preferred king. You know, so he sheltered his son. And as the story goes, when his son got older and he got curious about the world outside the compound where he lived, that he went out with his sort of escort, his chaperone, if you will. And as they were out in the village, he saw someone who was very, very sick, you know, very, very weak, very feeble. And he was curious about this. And he asked his escort, what is this condition? He said, "Well, this is sickness." And he said, "Does this occur to everyone?" And his chaperone said, "Yes, everyone. Everyone gets sick at some point." So he registered that. And another time when he was out, he saw someone really old, you know, with no teeth and bent over and, you know, barely able to walk. And he said, "But what is this condition?" And his chaperone said, "Well, this is old age." He said, "And does this happen to everyone?" He goes, "Yes, everyone gets old. Well, he registered that. Another time they were out and they came across a corpse, just a dead body. And the Buddha became very curious about this. What is this? Well, this is death. Well, will this occur to me? Well, does it occur to everyone? Yes, everyone will die. So he contemplated that. This is three heavenly messengers. And another time they were out, and he saw a renunciate. He saw a very, very simple person, you know, wearing very simple clothes, who seemed very happy and ecstatic. And the Buddha became very interested by this person who seemed very, very lit up. And he had a conversation with him. It was a very, very stimulating conversation of this man who had decided to forego worldly pleasures, but to practice deeply and contemplate the nature of reality. And that began the Buddha's search. You know, what is it that is beyond sickness, old age, and death? What is the self that can die? Is there a self that doesn't die? That began his search. And so it's a very, very helpful thing to contemplate and turn our attention to these heavenly messengers, because we are kind of programmed to not go there. When we get sick, we want to get through it as quickly as we can. Old age is something we call bad, and death is something we just don't think about. We have a way of compartmentalizing it, pushing it away. When in fact, when you look very, very closely at these factors of sickness, old age, and death, they reveal something very powerful. Not only can they be a doorway to embracing every moment of your life as a miracle, but they can also point to your true nature, to get a glimpse of the unconditioned self. So I wanted to lead a reflection on someone you know who has passed, and as a way of sort of contemplating this life journey. So if you like, you can close your eyes. And you might bring into mind someone you know who is no longer here in form. And I'd like you, if you would, to take some time to think of someone very specifically, just one person. And I'm going to offer just a few pointers and give you some time just to reflect or contemplate. As you reflect on this person, take some time to reflect on the last year of their life. What was their presence, their attitude? What shifted over that last year? Going to call out a few years, and you might, if these years are applicable, you might just think of them at this particular age. And again, you might be imagining, you might be just sort of freely associating. When you think of this person at the age of 45, what impressions or images arise? And when you think of this person at age 21, what comes to mind? when you think of or imagine this person at age 13, that awkward 13, at age 7, as you reflect on the arc of this person's life, what did they most enjoy in their life? What did they take delight in? What would you say were their life lessons? Take a moment to think of their smile, their goodness. And you might take a moment to think of the arc of your life. Of what you most enjoy, what you take delight in. The lessons that you are learning. And gently deepening the breath. And as you're ready, if you like, you can let your eyes open or remain with them closed. I grew up on a farm and worked on a farm all through college, so I was pretty close to creatures dying. Sometimes took active part in that. And one of the most amazing things, if you've had the occasion to be with an animal or a human as they pass, is this moment when they're there and then they're not. It's quite phenomenal. You know, they're there and then they're not. And so clearly you see the shell of what is left. It takes courage to look closely at that. And there are traditions where that is the practice. That lots of different traditions where you would meditate on the charnel grounds, where you contemplate the decomposition of the body. And while it can seem rather macabre, what it really does point to is the reality of impermanence. And so in our culture, we tend to push this aside. In other cultures, they embrace it. I thought I'd share with you a few Japanese death poems in the Zen tradition. It's kind of a classic. The classic departure is to go out with your killer haiku. So this is the classic. You may have heard this, but it just nails it. Now that my barn has burned down, I can see the moon. For 8 and 50 years, I've had my fun with the moon and the flowers. I love the idea of these old Zen guys contemplating their final words. Here's a third. The owner of the cherry blossoms turns the compost for the trees. It's such a great celebration. So I sort of thought, wow, what would my last words be? Probably nothing profound at all, I'm assuming. Like, could you turn the fan off? Something like that. Robert Frost has some great poems, and his shortest poem really nails it. He said, in three words, I can sum up everything I've learned about life. It goes on. And so this leads to what it means to live in impermanence. The mistake we make is believing that things won't change. I've mentioned before this great quote from a yogi who says, the greatest wonder in the world is that everyone dies. The second greatest wonder in the world is that no one thinks they will. You know, we fall into a trance of forgetting impermanence. So this morning I went out for my traditional paddle on the river. And right now there are flocks and flocks of seagulls making their way up the river. And every spring, right about this time, they're everywhere you look, there are seagulls, and they sort of chase out all the other birds. And every time they're there, it seems like, oh my God, they're going to be here forever. And then one day they're gone. Such a great reminder of that. And apparently there's some, when it gets this warm, there's some larvae that start to hatch. And so the gulls come in, and that's what they feed on. And as soon as the larvae are fully hatched, they take off for somewhere else. But I'm always surprised to see them. And kind of always surprised when they go. And it's such a beautiful reminder that everything is in a constant state of change. And so we become habituated to our senses. And we become habituated to this living, breathing body, and we assume it won't go. It's here forever. There's a meditation that I have found helpful that kind of points to the sense of true nature, of what it is beyond this changing form. So if you like, you can close your eyes again. Short little meditation. And so as you slow down your breath, just take a moment to acknowledge these sense doors. Notice the sounds, the vibration of sounds as they play. And notice this sense door of touch. Pressure points between your body and the chair. Texture of the air, the texture of your clothing. The internal sense of touch, the perception of movement, pressure. The sense of smell. The sense of taste. And the perception of light beyond your closed eyes. And then, if you would, imagine who you are, transcendent of sound. If sound was not available to you. Imagine yourself transcendent of touch. If touch was not available. transcendent of taste and smell. And transcendent of sight. Just sensing for a few moments who you are in the absence of the sense doors. And then again, take a moment to, again, just open all the sense doors. 360 degrees of sound, sensation, taste, smell, perception of light. And this living, vibrating universe. And then again, in your own way, you can let the breath deepen. You can open the eyes or remain with them closed if you like. And that practice can provide a little glimpse, just for that sense of what is it that's beyond the senses. And in the meantime, we live in this embodied world. And embracing change seems to be the key to happiness, of saying yes to what's changing. I feel so grateful to be healthy at this time in my life. I can swim, I can paddle, I can hike, I can carry carry a pack. And it's a really curious thing, is that the more I embrace the fact that one day I won't be able to do those things, when I remember that one day I'm going to lose all this function, it has a very curious side effect. That when I remember it, I can absolutely embrace and be grateful for and feel fully embodied right now when I engage. So it's that paradox of embracing the fact that all this is going to change is really the doorway to gratitude, the doorway to appreciation, which completely opens up this life for all it can be. And so then the question becomes, knowing that you're going to die, how do you want to live? There's an interesting reflection, which I've shared a little bit before, but it's about sort of reflecting on your future self. And when I sort of do that meditation, and I sort of sense, you know, like who I am 10 years out, 20 years out, you know, what does that old guy have to tell me by way of advice? And usually, every time I do it, it's kind of the same thing. Stop worrying. Have fun. And fun, I think, is a really high state of consciousness. So, you know, oftentimes people create their bucket list, you know, when they realize there's limited time ahead. And you may have heard that little clip from President Obama when he said he didn't want his bucket list, but he came up with something that rhymes with bucket and starts with an F. And that's a very healthy way to look at it, too. What are you no longer going to put up with? I remember once I was playing my bamboo flute at some memorial service. And there were all these people from, you know, from the retirement community. And in the middle of my flute playing, there's this guy who just said, "I'm bored, I want to go back." I thought, good for you, buddy. I want to be you someday. Just buck it. I want to go home. So a short reflection, if you will. You can like to close your eyes and deepen your breath. This is oftentimes called the rocking chair meditation. If you can imagine yourself at 102 and sitting on your rocker, you might just take a moment to imagine your face as a 102-year-old face. And feel your hands as 102-year-old hands. And your breath as 102-year-old breathing. When you look back over your life, what was most important? What are you most grateful for? And what advice does that wise old person have to offer you? What would they say to you? And if you followed that advice, not perfectly, not all the time, but if you engaged into that advice, what would that feel like? What would that be like? And what changes would you make? And then again, you can deepen your breath. And if you like, you can let your eyes open. The number one regret of the dying, I was not true to myself. And cultivating non-judging awareness of looking closely at how your life is filtered and shaped by unconscious greed, by unconscious hatred, and by delusion, you'll naturally begin to see more clearly. You'll naturally begin to sense what really enlivens you. We talked a little bit in the past about those elements of positive psychology. You know, that acronym of PERMA, to have positive emotions filling your life, to feel engaged in your life, to have relationships that enliven you, to have a sense of meaning, to have a sense of accomplishment. Those are, I think, really wonderful descriptions of a well-lived life. And they can be a wonderful way to attune to what it means to live a full and rich life for yourself. So how do you live this life knowing that there's no schedule for your departure? There's one final reading that I want to share with you. Han Shan, that great and crazy, wonderful Chinese poet of 1,000 years ago, said this: "We're just like bugs in a bowl, all day going around, never leaving the bowl." I say, that's right. Every day climbing up the steep slides, sliding back, over and over again, around and around, up and back down. Sit in the bottom of the bowl, head in your hands, cry, moan, feel sorry for yourself. Or look around. See your fellow bugs. Say, hey, how you doing? Say, nice bowl. Isn't that great? 1,000 years ago. That's so good. Let's close with a meditation. You might just take this time to slow down the breath. And again, in your own way, feel the aliveness that is present through the senses, filling your body, stimulating the brain. You might sense in your own way this fact of impermanence. Anything that is born of causes and conditions is subject to change. And you might sense in your own way this quality of non-judging awareness. This changeless quality of wakefulness. And we'll close with something called the 5 daily reflections. I am of the nature to age and decay. I have not gone beyond aging and decay. I am of the nature to become ill or injured. I have not gone beyond illness or injury. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond death. All that is mine, dear and delightful, will change and vanish. I am the owner of my actions. I am born of my actions. I am related to my actions. I am supported by my actions. Any thoughts, words, or deeds I do, those I will inherit. And in these final moments, sensing that in the reality of change, that there is also this infinite capacity for kindness and compassion and joy. And imagine in your own way your life filled and infused with these qualities. kindness, compassion, and joy. And deepening your breath. When you're ready, you can let your eyes open. Thank you for sitting through that talk. I hope it's helpful on some level. A few quick reminders. There is a book club, a Dharma book club, you may want to check out in the newsletter. It's a very cool gathering. We're coming to the very end of the Year of Living Mindfully applications, so if you have any questions, feel free to check in with me. March 1st is the deadline. Remember, there's awesome yoga that's happening before the class. You may want to check that out at 6:30. And as always, thanks for your generous support for the church and for myself. You can sign up for newsletter in the back. And if just know that there's anything in this talk that was the slightest bit disturbing, it all gets balanced out by having a cookie. So that's waiting for you too. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.